This is Brother Michael Diamond with Brother Peter Diamond giving you a new radio program in this early September. People have asked us to do some radio programs more often, so we want to give some updates on what we've been involved with and some other issues.
One thing that I've been doing recently is calling various, quote, traditionalist priests and asking them about the Catholic faith, and particularly a heresy of Benedict XVI. And the conversations are quite revealing, because as soon as I begin to speak with them or ask them a question, and before they even realize who I am, they're basically willing to drop me, hang up on me. They're not interested in trying to change my mind. As soon as it is clear to them that I'm posing a question that they're not comfortable answering or talking about because they don't know how to answer it, or it's a theological issue they don't care about, they're basically ready to hang up the phone or drop the conversation. And it is so clear, and it's become even more clear, that with basically all the traditionalist priests and religious, almost all of them, the only thing that they care about is dressing up in robes and having a status and being called father. And you have seen the same thing, have you not, in basically these conversations?
Well, quite honestly, I believe that most people who join religious communities, even so-called traditional Catholic communities, just go in for this, quote, status of feeling like they're religious. It's not so much about whether they're really standing for the truth. It's about whether this group is looked upon with favor and with a good status. Do they have a good status? Are they able to dress up in something that makes people think that they're something? And I think that's what a lot of people, when they go into the seminary, when they want to become priests and eventually become priests, that's all they care about. They just want to be called, as you said, father. They want the status of it. And unfortunately, that's what most lay people out there also are only interested in, just going to a place that has some kind of proper status in their own mind and going to someone who's dressed up in a way that makes them feel Catholic. Instead of actually being Catholic and really standing for the truth, it's about feeling holy rather than actually being holy.
For example, I will call them up and ask them, are you aware that Benedict XVI rejects Vatican Council I? And in almost every case, they begin to ask me questions about who I am and why am I calling, as if it's just extremely unusual and uncharitable and basically threatening to call up and ask a theological question. The only questions that they're really interested in answering are, oh, Father, would you bless me? Oh, Father, would you bless this? And it really reminds me of Matthew chapter 23, verse 7, where Jesus is rebuking the Pharisees, and he says in verse 6, he says, and they love the first places at feasts and the first chairs in the synagogues and salutations in the marketplace and to be called by men rabbi. And you could throw the word father in there, that these priests, they love to be called father. They love to have the title. They love to play the part. That's what they care about. But the substance of the faith, they don't care at all, because when I would ask them the question, some of them would say, well, he doesn't believe that. And then I would prove that he does by various facts. And they would have no answer, say, well, I don't have that in front of me, goodbye, or I don't know about that, I don't agree, or goodbye. No interest to try to even change my mind, to try to investigate it further. And it's really this huge elephant in the room that Benedict XVI denies the whole Catholic faith, but even if we focus in on Vatican I, in which he's denying the papacy by teaching that the Orthodox are in the Church. And these priests claim to stand for the papacy, so it's a complete mockery of the Catholic faith that they can claim to be priests in union with the papacy and not even care that the man that they regard as a pope thinks the Orthodox are part of the Church. And when I talk to them, it's so obvious they couldn't basically care less. And so it's a monumental fraud, and in talking to them recently, it made it even more clear just how much of a fraud it is. And all they care about is status.
And you were saying that when you spoke to them, and you would say to them, I can prove to you that even Lefebvre himself believed that people that live and practice false religions and die in those false religions can be saved, no matter what religion they practice. They say, no, it's out of context, he doesn't say that. And then you were saying that as soon as you try to bring up the actual book that has the pages that prove this, they don't want to hear it, they want to stop the conversation, they say this isn't proper to do it in this forum, and you say to yourself, okay, how do you even ever ask a theological question to any of these guys? They won't answer your questions. It's like you're calling up and threatening them that you're going to, like, kill them or something by asking them some simple theological question, what their particular position is on the issue. That's something you should never, ever ask.
And I spoke with two seminarians, one priest, and the first seminarian, when I brought up the fact that the Society of St. Pius X believes souls can be saved in non-Catholic religions, said, I think that's very uncharitable of you to take that out of context the way you have. So he immediately falsely presumes that I've taken it out of context when, in fact, that's their position. And when I tried to offer him the evidence, I believe he just basically wasn't interested and hung up. And then another seminarian I spoke with said that they don't believe that, not at all. And then I started to give him the facts and basically wasn't interested and the conversation ended. But what's so interesting is they have these seminarians flocking to their buildings from all over the world. They're just teeming with seminarians who don't care one bit about the Catholic faith, who don't have a clue that their own group's books teach that souls can be saved in any religion. It's just a huge fraud, and again, it gets back to externals dressing up in robes. That's what the people who enter their seminaries care about.
And that's why when they send out petitions for donations, no matter who it is, that's what impresses the people. If you've got some kind of big building or, in their eyes, proper building, dressing up in habits or in cassocks and their pictures of it, it doesn't, for most of the people that even donate and support or claim to be Catholic, claim to be traditional Catholic, they never even would think of what does this group believe about X, Y, and Z. Do they believe even Jesus Christ is necessary? Do they even believe the Catholic faith is necessary? Those are the furthest questions from the mind of people, and it's the very reason that people continue to go to these places. They continue to support them. They never look into what they believe, what their books state, their positions. All that matters to most, sadly, is going there and just being in a building where they feel good and things look good. It's not about whether Jesus Christ is necessary for salvation, the Catholic faith is necessary, whether these people are actually trying to convert people, the fact that they accept apostates and heretics as members of the Catholic Church and don't denounce them, none of that matters in the least to people, unfortunately, today. And it's the very reason we're in the position that we're in today. And that's why things are going down the drain, and that's why things were going down the drain even before Vatican II, because people weren't trying to aggressively convert non-Catholics to the Catholic faith. People didn't care about the Catholic faith. They didn't believe that it was necessary to be a Catholic to be saved, and that's why all of this was able to happen after Vatican II, because things were crumbling before Vatican II.
And I realized, and we realized, that they were heretical, these groups, obviously, and didn't believe in the authentic faith. But in speaking to more of them, it became even more clear to me what motivates them, because I'm talking to these guys, and I'm asking them, are you aware that he rejects Vatican I? He teaches that the Eastern Orthodox are in the Church. It's a well-documented fact. They have no answer for that. They just basically say, well, I'm not aware of that, or I don't have the facts. And then I'm saying that, don't you care about that, or what's your response to this? And they basically hang up or don't care. And I'm saying, well, if they don't care about the fact that their own, quote, pope denies the papacy by teaching that people who deny the papacy are in the Church, what motivates them? And in talking to them, it became clear what motivates them is being hailed as rabbi, being hailed as father, dressing up in robes, having this status, and that's what motivates basically all the traditional priests that hold heresies.
Being part of a certain group, That's why, like you were saying, that when you would try to talk to them and just get a little bit of time to speak about these issues, they just said, I think I have to go. Maybe someone can call you back.
Oh, the seminarians, yes. When I would begin to talk to them about the faith, they didn't care about what I was saying. And it's interesting, one of the seminarians, when I was hitting him with facts that he didn't care about and couldn't answer, he basically asked me more about who we were, and I told him we had a website, and I gave him the website. And he was like, so you don't have a church? And I pointed out we have a monastery. And that was what he was interested in. He was more interested in whether we have a setup.
A proper external
right,
structure.
Right, not the facts I was giving him. And so that's why people flock to these groups as religious and or priests. It's not about the faith. It's about status. And it's also, in regard to the laity, the reason that they go to these churches, it's about community. It's about having a spiritual feeling. It's about friendship in almost every case. So it's really a monumental deception. It really is.
And see, that's why people don't support the faith, because they don't care about it. That's why even the Sede of Acanthus position was so poorly, the information about that issue was so poorly disseminated by the groups that were out there even 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, because these guys don't even believe the Catholic faith is necessary by any stretch of the imagination, and so they're not going to put out a lot of effort even to print up information about this issue, because they don't even believe the Catholic faith is necessary for salvation. And it's the very reason that people support aggressively these groups that put up churches and have priests, ordain priests, and meanwhile, spreading the real Catholic faith means almost nothing.
And I was thinking about it. The Fraternity of St. Peter, I mean, they've got churches all over the place, different dioceses. The whole thing is a complete spiritual fraud. Their priests don't believe in the papacy at all. They don't care about it at all. And so it's really a sad commentary on the laity, because the laity are supporting these churches, and basically it's this elephant in the room. No one cares about the fact that the man they regard doesn't believe in Jesus, he doesn't believe in the papacy, it doesn't matter.
In fact, even if you try to confront these people, I'd say almost 100% of them, if you went to them on Sunday and asked them certain questions about their particular beliefs, do you realize that the Fraternity of St. Peter supports X, Y, and Z? Or in the case of the SSPX, do you realize the SSPX supports positions X, Y, and Z, that they hold this position, that position? People would say, stop bothering me. I don't agree with you. It's out of context. They don't believe that.
And when you call these priests up and you begin to ask them, and in a matter-of-fact, charitable fashion, are you aware that he holds that these people are in the church, that he denies Vatican I, they act as if you're prideful, as if you're uncharitable. It's so outrageous.
It's so upside down. It's an outrage.
And so the fraud of those groups, and the same kind of thing would apply to the Sede of Acanthus priests who deny the salvation dogma, who believe Jews, Buddhists, Hindus can be saved. They're in it mainly for status, for being hailed as father, for wearing robes. That's really because they don't believe Jesus is necessary.
And you were saying, actually, when you called a lot of these places, that you could barely even get someone to pick up the phone.
That's another thing, that they have all kinds of chapels, all kinds of employees, secretaries, and with the Fraternity of St. Peter, it's hard to get someone on the phone. I mean, yet if you call our monastery, you get someone answering almost 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and speaking about that issue, the next thing that I wanted to mention was actually some of the stats, for example. We've been running different national radio ads on some of the largest radio networks in the country, and just between June 30th and July 30th, or actually June 25th to July 24th, We received 2,654 phone calls from the United States, in the United States alone. And we had 1,714 of the $5 small packages ordered. And so, and someone say, wow, you're getting, you know, a pretty good amount of calls and so forth. And we could get even a lot more of these calls throughout the day, picking up these calls, taking these orders from people that are giving them at least a basic introductory package of information to get them up to speed as to what's going on. And we can get out a lot more of these things. And the reason why we had so many calls, because we were running ads and so forth, is because of the financial assistance that we've been receiving from people. And we certainly appreciate those who are putting out the effort to send us donations. But we need not only more donations, but larger donations from those who can and have the financial wherewithal to send them. Because that is the biggest obstacle, really, or one of the biggest, to getting this information out to a larger number of people who have never heard of our information, have never heard of us, have never seen our website, have never seen any of the DVDs or books that we've put out. It will give them an opportunity to come to the knowledge of the full truth of what's going on. And so we really need to get this information out even more aggressively. Advertising, we are through internet advertising, radio ads, printing up this information, sending out these packages. So if you care about the salvation of souls, and the only way to save souls is by getting them the real authentic Catholic faith, and the only place that you're going to find the full authentic Catholic faith, at least promoting an organization, the full authentic Catholic faith, is our organization. And so that's why we need people to aggressively support us, especially considering the signs of the times that we can see with the economy collapsing. Now the post office saying that they may shut down unless they get a $5.5 billion grant by the end of September, that they're going to shut down for the entire winter, which may be the complete collapse, cause the complete collapse of the economy. Not that it's not collapsing already, but it may be sort of the final nail in the coffin for the U.S. economy. And who knows what we might see. We're already seeing across the country roving bands of people that are attacking people, gangs and so forth. And we know that the conspiracy wants to create another false flag operation in the near future. And the only way that that's not going to happen is divine intervention. They definitely plan to put it into place, and it was interesting. Some of the information that's out there that shows how, for example, in Israel now, over the last few months, Israel has been conducting joint drills with the U.S. to protect the country of Israel from missile attacks from probably Iran, they think. And so they've been holding these drills. We also have something like there are over 50 different bills to basically shut down the internet over the last couple of years. Over 50 different bills to shut down the current internet, move to an internet to ban all kinds of non-approved websites. In fact, just today, there's a guy who puts out information on earthquakes, and maybe some of these are, you know, man-made earthquakes, and has alternative information, had something like 35,000 subscribers or maybe more than that. His whole YouTube channel shut down. And so we see this kind of these things happening, people being prosecuted now for uploading YouTube videos, all these kinds of different laws that are going on. Companies being shut down because they use wood from a certain country, whole companies shut down. And so we can see the signs of the times and what's going on. I really believe the people who talk about the year 2012 and that will it end in 2012 is that it doesn't have to necessarily end in 2012 or the economy, or you don't have to have some major crisis in 2012, but I personally believe that the conspiracy and the international bankers may try to capitalize on the paranoia and hysteria about the year 2012, that they may try to collapse the U.S. economy, maybe the whole world economy, by or in 2012, because they think probably that most people might be willing to go forward into either North American Union, one world economic situation, whatever, because they think it's just part of the signs of the times, it's part of the fulfillment of prophecy, etc. I really think that the window of time is short, and so that's why people need to ramp up the efforts to get this information out to people. We've put in roughly $1 million into this apostolate, printing things up, advertising over just the last few years. And so the thing about it is that those who have the financial wherewithal need to support us and help get this information out to people while there's still some time left, because the time is coming soon when you won't have the opportunity even to maybe get to our website. It'll be shut down. Maybe the whole internet will be shut down, and the whole economy may collapse. And so people need to really realize the signs of the times and try to make a difference while there's still some time left.
One other thing that occurred recently was the debate that I had with Robertson Jonas on Vatican II, and maybe I'll offer a few comments about that and how it came to fruition. Earlier in the summer, I wrote to various Novus Ordo apologists asking them for a debate on Vatican II or Benedict XVI, and he was one of those that I wrote to, and I asked him if he'd be willing to debate Benedict XVI or Vatican II. Well, actually, I asked him if he'd be willing to have a recorded telephone conversation. I didn't call it a debate because I thought they might be more willing to engage in a conversation if it's not called a debate. And he wrote back and said that he would be willing to do a debate, but not over the telephone and not until next year. And obviously, we weren't interested in waiting like a year. So what I figured was that he was uncomfortable having a telephone debate in which he was not prepared for the facts that I was going to bring up. So I figured that if I offered a telephone debate, which was limited to one passage that he knew about in advance, that he would accept. And my inclination was correct. He actually did accept that because he actually thinks he can explain away basically any heresy in Vatican II. And so that's how the debate came to fruition. That's how it was limited to one topic. And I actually like those debates because when you analyze in detail each specific issue, you can see more clearly the truth on the matter. And in the case of a debate on whether something's heretical, you can see the malice involved in each statement. I mean, this is just one statement and all of the heretical implications it holds, how indefensible it is, how many things go along with it. Whereas if you rip off maybe 20 heresies in a debate about Benedict XVI, people can sort of gloss over what's involved with each one. And as people can see in the debate, I think it's pretty clear what position is correct. And I want to also mention that it's interesting in the debate when I began to bring up early on, in basically my second session, 3 or 4 minutes in, that his own anti-pope, Benedict XVI, has made numerous statements admitting that Vatican II teaches exactly what I'm saying, esteem for Islam. As we started to discuss that, he tried to argue that that's not relevant. And that's clearly an absurd statement. Obviously, what his own authorities say about Vatican II is relevant to this debate. It's not only relevant, it's central, because in his first statement, he called Vatican II an ecumenical council. Well, why is it an ecumenical council? According to him, because Paul VI, the man who promulgated it, held authority in the church. Therefore, what the authority of Paul VI said and what the authority of Benedict XVI says is absolutely central to the understanding of Vatican II. So he knew it was relevant. He was just unprepared for dealing with the quotes from his own authorities proving what I'm saying. So he first tried to argue that this is not about Benedict XVI, hoping that I would not include them. But once I pointed out that they're actually relevant, you'll notice that he admits that they're relevant, so he actually contradicts himself. Another point of note is that in the debate, I pointed out early on and repeatedly that it's esteeming all the Muslims, and it's actually esteeming the faith of Islam because it mentions fetus Islamica right in the context of praising them for their fast, their worship, etc. And he just flat out denied that Islam's there. He said he sees the reference to Muslimos, but not Islam. You can hear that. But then at the 17-minute mark, after I said it's definitely there, he admits, well, it is actually there. He was wrong. So that's a point to note. But when you think about it, he's arguing that Islam is not there. Well, what does that imply? That implies that if it is there, that what I'm saying is correct, that it's esteeming all the Muslims and the faith of Islam, their religious practices, etc., in context. And that's why he was originally arguing, well, I don't see Islam there. But once he notices it's there, does he admit, well, that actually creates a problem? No, he just says, well, it doesn't matter. And so that's worthy of note. He also made the argument, once I appealed to his own authorities to prove the point, among other things, that, well, if you're going to appeal to their authority, where's the decree from them, for example, from Paul VI, stating that Vatican II is heretical? And that's obviously an absurd requirement. They're not going to declare their own decree heretical. But I also pointed out that he rejects the joint declaration with the Lutherans on justification as false or heretical. And he has no decree from his own authority stating that it is false or heretical. So that was obviously a false argument. And then the points that were made about how it says that they worship God who has spoken to humanity. That's clearly the true God. It's saying that they worship the true God, and it's esteeming their worship. It's esteeming all the Muslims in view of their religious practices. So that's a revealing and valuable debate, but I think that it really shows how absurd the position he and others who would agree with that position is, that they're going to have to put themselves at variance with statement after statement of their own anti-popes, what the statement clearly indicates in context, all the things that have flowed out of Vatican II as a result not of a misinterpretation, but of what it actually says. And so it just really demonstrates how false and heretical and fraudulent Vatican II is and the whole sect. And there are many other passages we could get into.
And just a side issue, one thing that I found interesting in dealing with him is that he mentioned in his email exchanges with you, he was calling you Brother Peter, Brother Peter, Brother Peter, and yet during the debate, he called you Peter Diamond, Peter twice.
Well, yes, that's a whole nother area, the personal hypocrisy, and I'm glad you mentioned that. And before I get into that, I will say that I'm glad the debate was cordial. We stuck to the issues. We got it done. So that was good, and who knows, maybe there'll be another one in the future like that. But in getting this debate arranged, he also said the only way he would do it is if I observed etiquette that he deemed proper. And he says, I don't like your style, whereas like in some of the debates we've had, we condemn people and insult them. Well, you'll notice that I've had cordial debates. We've had cordial debates. We've also had debates that are feisty. It really depends on the argumentation launched by the other side, and so we can do it both ways. But the bottom line is, I pointed out in response that you demand a certain etiquette, but you've had debates in which you call your opponent, you accuse your opponent of being guilty of demagoguery. He also said to his opponent, you can't put your faith in Christ. How is that not insulting? And he basically didn't have any real response to that. So basically, he can launch insults, but if anyone throws what he deems to be an insult, he's going to quit. And in fact, he said that if I insulted him, he would hang up the phone on me. And that obviously didn't become an issue because we stuck to the facts and we got it done. But
and also, one other thing is that in your exchanges, you asked him, how do you want to be addressed, Bob or Robert? And he said, I like Robert. And so you called him Robert over and over and over again. And he was calling in the exchanges Brother Peter, and yet when it came to the debate, he didn't even have to say Brother Peter or Peter to you, but of course when he addressed you, he calls you Peter, not Brother Peter.
Well, that's a good point. That one of the things I pointed out in the emails leading up to the debate as an inconsistency in his position on this issue is, in his emails he was originally calling me Peter, and I said, well, you're against insults and you're against you want to uphold this proper etiquette. Why do you call me Peter? When you call me Peter instead of Brother Peter, you're implying that my claim to be a religious is false. That's obviously insulting, that it's spiritually fraudulent. And he said, well, good point. And then after that, in the emails, he started calling me Brother Peter, because it's otherwise it's not consistent with the etiquette he requires. But when we got to the debate, as you just mentioned, he called me Peter, maybe because he didn't like how the argumentation was going. And he didn't even have to. He could have just spoke. He could have just spoken and said what he wanted to say. And so it's an interesting illustration of how these guys who act as if they're charitable aren't charitable. Their charity's false. And so those are some of the interesting... Oh, another thing I wanted to mention is, and it really applies to all of the Novus Ordo apologists, he doesn't even believe anti-Catholic Protestants are heretics. I mean, when you think about that, that is mind-boggling. They believe that people who attack the Catholic faith and reject the faith their whole lives aren't even heretics. But he says we're heretics.
And yet, and also just going back to the Fraternity of St. Peter and SSPX, when you asked an SSPX priest, was Ted Kennedy, who has supported gay quote marriage, is totally pro-abortion, was he a Catholic? And he said because he was baptized, he was a Catholic. He may have been a bad Catholic. He was maybe even a scandalous Catholic, but he was still a Catholic. There you go.
Yes, and it's so revealing. But the only way you could get a debate with one of these guys and was that you give him the passage in advance, you limit it to one passage. But even on that, I think it was quite revealing. And actually, as I was saying earlier, those debates can even be better because you can dig into the issue. You can see just how wicked and evil each particular statement is. And the consequences of it, because once they say they esteem the Muslims corporately in view of their worship, then everything you're seeing flows out of that. It's just logical consequence. If they're to be esteemed, if their worship is esteemed, if fetus Islamic is to be esteemed in context, then obviously their worship is true. Obviously that this is not something that's an abomination. And so it's a very revealing debate, and we've been sending it around to some Novus Ordo people in the hopes that and make them realize what's going on. And we could debate. I mean, there are about 7 to 10 passages that I could have picked that are equally indefensible. There are many other heresies, but there are about maybe 7 to 10 that are on a certain level where you can really dig in and just show how utterly heretical it is. And that was one of them.
And just switching topics, some of you have now heard we put up recently this Vatican Lutheran agreement on the Reformation that's coming up. This was put out August 30th, 2011. It says, according to the Vatican official on ecumenism, the Church and the World Lutheran Federation are preparing a joint declaration on the Reformation in view of the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's 95 Theses. Cardinal Kurt Koch, president of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, announced this in an interview. Then they say, blah, 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 that Benedict XVI wants his September 22nd to 25th trip to Germany to have an ecumenical focus. The Catholic Lutheran document will, quote, analyze the Reformation in light of 2,000 years of Christianity. And it says, quote, the joint commemoration of this anniversary could be the occasion for a mutual mea culpa, the report suggested. For Cardinal Koch, quote, a common purification of memory is necessary. During his trip to Germany, Benedict XVI will visit the city where Luther carried out part of his studies, and it goes on and on and on. He's going to have a meeting with the Jews, the Muslims. What else is he doing here? Members of the Schismatic, quote, Orthodox Church. And this is really going to probably be something. I mean, visiting Luther's places, he's going to be probably commemorating the guy as if he were some saint of the church. And then, of course, the following month, he'll be going to Assisi. And in the recent Heresy of the Week, the most recent Heresy of the Week, you can see Benedict XVI talking about the upcoming event of Assisi. And he says, quote, this is on his address, June 28, 2011, to the delegation of the, quote, Orthodox Ecumenical Patriarchy of Constantinople. He says this, quote, in our common intention and remembering the beautiful example of my predecessor, Blessed John Paul II, I've wished to invite our Christian brethren, the representatives of the other religious traditions of the world, and of the important figures of the world of culture and of science to take part next 27 October in the town of Assisi in a day of reflection, dialogue, and prayer for peace and justice in the world, which will have as its theme, quote, pilgrims of truth, pilgrims of faith, end quote. This joint march through the streets of the town of St. Francis will be the sign of the wish to continue in the way of dialogue and brotherhood. He goes on and on. So he's declaring the members of false religions, the leaders of false religions that will come on to Assisi on October 27th of this year, 2011. He declares these representatives of false religions, quote, pilgrims of truth, pilgrims of faith, as if they have the true faith. And so that's why if you don't realize that Benedict XVI is a heretic, that he doesn't have the Catholic faith, if you think he's a Catholic, you're just an utter heretic that's headed right from the pit of hell. And of course, right after this event in November, late November, he's got this new missal coming out, the end of November, for people to use, where he's cleaning up all kinds of the bad translations, and it will be certainly enough to satisfy everybody right after his acts of heresy, schism, and apostasy in late September and October.
Yes, that's what people need to understand, that there is an absolute agenda here by the devil in which he's going to have these massively heretical events where he's going to be doing something with Luther, and then he's going to have this new Assisi event right before he comes out with this new, quote, conservative translation of the Novus Ordo. And so maybe people will be questioning or outraged for a little bit, but in their bad will, once he comes out with the conservative Novus Ordo translation, they will swallow all the heresy, forget it, and it will be accepted. That's the agenda of the devil, because he knows that they just care about externals and the mass issue. And that's exactly how the false prophet will work. That's what he does. He'll do something that's not even conservative, but people consider conservative. And it's usually right after something massively heretical. And they accept it all. And it's really transparent what's going on. And that's another thing that, with obviously the laity, some of the laity, the more evidence you can provide in finding out about the information on our website, etc., can bring them to the true position. But with some of these hardened heretics and priests and speakers for various false traditionalist groups, I'm convinced, and you're convinced, I believe, as well, that with basically all of them, nothing will change their view. That if they've accepted Benedict XVI at this point, he could canonize Martin Luther, and they will still accept him as Pope. They will go down to hell, basically, adhering to this position. And it's because God, I believe, has pulled his grace from them. And if they've accepted the heresy thus far, the Joint Declaration, all these things, nothing will swing them. Nothing. And this is an example. What a joke. I mean, we're basically going to have something here with Luther, another Assisi, which they said he would never do. Of course not. Also, Donald Worrell, the Novus Ordo apostate bishop, recently gave a $25,000 donation to the non-Catholic National Cathedral after the earthquake hit. That's just another example of what you're dealing with the Vatican II Church. A non-Catholic cathedral where they have all these sacrilegious ceremonies, I believe female, quote, ordinations, homosexual type of events. It has damage in the earthquake, so the so-called Catholic bishop will send the money that the so-called Catholics donated to the church to reconstruct and fix this non-Catholic building. It's really outrageous. Something else that's interesting is we saw the video, the Exodus Revealed search for the Red Sea crossing, and it's a video we've sold for quite a while, and I recently rewatched the video. That's one of the best videos, in my opinion, that I've ever seen. It's just amazing how they've pinpointed what I believe and we believe the actual location of the Red Sea crossing to be. And it's just the footage, the location they've uncovered, the way that they've shown how the path that Moses followed extends through two walls of mountains on either side, and there's a beach just enough of an area so that all the Israelites could be encamped there, trapped between mountains on either side and the sea. And that when they've shown satellite imagery of the sea floor. In this area of the Red Sea, the sea floor is just high enough where the beach extends, so that if the water were miraculously removed, they could walk across it. But if you move maybe shortly to the left or not very far to the right, the seafloor extends into an underwater canyon, like a mile deep, so you couldn't walk across the seafloor, even if the water were miraculously removed. So the seafloor is just high enough in the area where the beach extends so that they could all walk across it. And they've got all this on the video. It's as if God arranged it in advance that this would be the area he would work the miracle. It's just an amazing video.
And, of course, they show at the bottom of the sea the chariot wheels covered in coral. And so you see the actual footage that proves that that's the place that the event actually happened. And that's only $7. And we also have the other DVD, Jesus in the Shroud of Turin, which is also an incredible DVD on the Shroud for $7. And of course, we have the three video series on the incredible creatures that defy evolution, which are absolutely worth watching. They are tremendous. They are $15 a piece. We wish we could have gotten them for a cheaper price. We would have sold them for a cheaper price. And then, of course, we have the DVD that he was talking about. But in addition to those DVDs, we have the DVD Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, the DVD The Privileged Planet, and the final one, A Case for a Creator. And those are only $3 for each one of those. And those would be highly recommended. So if you don't have much money, those are definitely worth getting. And we encourage people to get that.